nations. We must realize that none of the problems of nations will ever be solved by civil war. It is an entirely wrong, and it is being supported and supplied for profit. These things must be changed. We are here not to find out how many different countries we can have. We are here to find out how soon we can have one happy world, a world of people working together for the final good of all that lives. These other things are simply arbitrary, artificial, and exist only to exploit the resources and life values of the person. The time has come to change this entire way of life and to do things as they should be done while there is still an opportunity to do so. So we go back again now to Mr. Bacon's code, because there's something there that's very interesting. That the purpose of science is to justify faith. Now this seems to be a direct borrowing from Plato. For Plato was the one who said that the end of wisdom is the perfection of faith. The individual who is truly wise believes in universal good, believes in a universal power of the source of life, believes that the good life is the way of freedom and happiness, and that those who live a good life here face the unknown future with a good hope. These things are part of the Baconian speculation. Bacon has been regarded as one of the founders of science. But science is nothing in itself. Science is not fulfilled by discovering holes in space or counting the many stars in the galaxy. Science has as its purpose to build the solid facts underneath our lives that there is a divine purpose, that there is a universal law, and that it is the duty of science to clarify these facts and to find these laws and help us to live them. That all of these other magnificent, glamorous discoveries only complicate living and furthermore diminish natural resources. We are outgrowing ourselves. We are gaining a certain sense of superiority that we are not justified in. We are not justified in the belief that we are better off than we ever were before, or that we are the noblest creatures ever fashioned. We are only justified to know when we'll do it right, do it honestly, and do it kindly. We are tired of the constant strategies and selfish byways of human thinking. We are no longer interested in gossip. We are no longer interested in all these little selfish smallnesses that have divided humanity since the dawn of time. We are now moving toward the 21st century. We are moving out of 2,000 years of post-Christian problems. We are moving into a new world order of life. We must take into that something besides the old baggage. We cannot afford to take into the new the rubbish of the old. We must take into the new a new dream, a new hope, a new aspiration, a new willingness to sacrifice for principles, a new integrity. Unless we do this, the problems that we face will never be solved. Bacon gives us also another very good and proper way of looking at this. Actually, every individual's personal life is an action of divine law. The individual's own personal existence is his most immediate spiritual experience. It is his most immediate opportunity to grow, to correct the mistakes of the past, to vitalize the virtues of the future. Therefore, to the degree that we reorganize our own lives and thinking, to the degree that we become better people ourselves, to that degree we keep trust with the future and keep faith with the integrities of life. It is an marvelous thing to view the galaxy, as we do even at night in the sky. The telescopes make us more detailed knowledge, but the real facts on the telescope is unnecessary. There we are, on a little ball in the midst of an infinite distribution of worlds. Worlds beyond measure, worlds beyond concept, worlds beyond the measures of time or place. Here we are, orphans, so to say. There is no physical connection between us and all these other worlds, but inside of us, we are part of all of them. There is an internal connection, an eternal connection, by which life is united to life wherever it is. Whatever it does, it is part of all. It is perfectly possible for us to become citizens of space while we're still sitting here on this molehill. It is perfectly possible for us to realize the immortality of ourselves, the eternality of ourselves, the unending growth of ourselves, even while we are only limited to one little planet. But we must have dreams. We must have ideals. We must have hopes. We must have realizations of the immensity of our own privilege, our own opportunity to be part of something that is going on to the perfection of the law that created it. We must realize that we are citizens of one vast universe, many universes as we see them. We are citizens of eternity as well as of time. We are not only here for a few years, maybe come back again a few dozen times. We are part of eternity and always will be. And as we grow, we will release more of this eternity from within ourselves. We will become greater people. We will become wiser and nobler and more loving. And we will build a world that can endure because there is nothing to wreck it. The only thing that can wreck humanity is humanity, and it's inhumanity. Therefore, these things have got to come out and be taught. They've got to become part of the new century, or there won't be any new century worth living in. If we simply push the present problem into some other administration, we are failing completely in the principal purpose for our existence. So we want you to very seriously think about these things and realize the relationship between universal law and the legislative processes of modern society. We elect various officials to various capacities and duties, and we appoint them. We do not know whether they are capable or not. We do not know whether they have the proper integrities that we need or not. We simply elect them because of a poll. We do not know what these people are doing or why. We need representation. We have to have it. But we have to have some assurance that those whom we give power over us are worthy of that power. There is where Hammurabi's law comes in. The individual who becomes a governor of others must be above reproach. And if by any chance he is not above reproach, he must be punished far more seriously than the average individual. He must be made to realize that his opportunity to serve is his responsibility to integrity. And if this is not emphasized, if we continue to buy our way into various public offices, we will have the same problems forever. Therefore, even in now, well, we probably can't change things that fast, is it very necessary for us to think more and more about what we need, and that it is more important than what we want, that it is important and necessary for us to build a future or there will not be one. The old Nordic myth of the great war and the war in heaven, the Armageddon, and of the Ragnarok, the twilight of the gods, was when perversion and disturbance and error dominated the world. The great confusion, the last great war was fought. And the last great war, in fact, in philosophy, is the battle between integrity and selfishness. It is the battle between the individual doing what he should do and the individual allowing things to be done that should not be done and performing such imperfect actions himself. So we need to have a real insight that the time is very, very near when we have got to take it as make a serious study of ourselves. Now, such serious studies are far more important, it seems to me, than an effort to discover the native home of some clam or something of this nature, for which thousands of dollars will be allocated, millions of dollars will be allocated, to find some little fragment of knowledge that will make very little difference to us, maybe a slight difference to the clam involved. These great grants of money should be used primarily to find the difference between right and wrong, to find the difference between virtue and vice, and also to find the way to conserve resources rather than to enlarge profits. we've got to learn gradually to do things differently. One way is being forced upon us. At this particular moment, our traffic problem is practically impossible. We are now so congested that it takes sometimes hours to go a few blocks. It's getting worse. We're selling more cars every day, and there are no roads suitable for them. If we continue long enough, we'll have to require all of the surface of the earth to be changed into highways. This is not very practical, as there are a number of structures on some of these places. But there is something that has to be done. There is no reason why a civilized humanity should work itself into a problem of this kind. It should have been solved before it started, because anyone with a little thought knew what was coming. And we have other things just the same way. Everything is sacrificed because its change would interfere with business, would interfere with profits, would reduce sales, and this in turn would reduce employment, and this in turn would reduce income, and this in turn would reduce sales, and we go right back where we started from. These are childish facts. We have got to outgrow them. We've got to begin to think as mature people. As children, we can think as children think. We can play with the toys of children as children did. In the Greek legend of Dionysus, Dionysus was the little son of Zeus who was to be the savior of mankind, the messianic infant in the Greek mythology. And it liked to play. And there were grave, very difficult, wicked ogres out there in space. There were giants who wanted to destroy this child. So what did they do? They spread toys in front of it, all kinds of playthings that a little child would love. And they kept spreading these toys further and further away from the protection of the heavenly family. And finally, when they got this little child way out in the wilderness, then they killed it. Now this is what we are more or less doing today. We are the little child, and they're putting the toys in front of us. They're putting these toys where we can play with them. And we're so full of play and so full of fun that we follow these toys out of the light of truth into a darkness so terrible that it is fatal to us. And out there are the ogres, the giants, the evil forces of selfishness, superstition, and fear to destroy the little spiritual child. The Greek myth is very telling, very interesting, and very informing. Now we have all the little toys being sprinkled out in front of humanity. We have television, we have radio, we have all the new different types of music and art and literature. We have all kinds of recreations. We have everything you can think of on the level of children. And we are being led little by little away from the solid values of life, out into the wilderness of hard rock and the like, until we get so far away that the ogres of selfishness, superstition, and fear can destroy us. It's a good message coming down from about 2,500 years ago. We are all following toys, collecting toys. They're making more expensive toys for us every day. And we have to do everything we can possibly think of in order to get money enough to buy the toys. And little by little, to get the toys, we are sacrificing the solid values of life. We want just fun, but there can be no fun in a shattered and broken world. We have to put it together as soon as we can. And to put it together, the first step is ourselves. Now, of course, there's a very valuable point in this. We may not be able to change other people, but once we have changed ourselves, we have made an important, lasting contribution to good. The growth that we make goes with us beyond the grave. The toys are broken and thrown away. The body is cast off. But the soul, with all that it has learned and known and loved and thought that was real, that goes on. We are building eternal values in ourselves and these in turn become part of the eternal value of humankind. Each individual, when they begin to discipline themselves, begins a new career that goes on forever. Once discipline becomes valued and accepted, the individual discovers the joy of doing things right, the joy of obedience rather than disobedience, and no longer considers truth as a limitation upon happiness. It is not. It is the source of the fulfillment of all real happiness. So little by little, we can gradually come to see that there is an interval between the divine plan in which we live and the human systems which we have created to avoid the responsibilities of our true purpose. Practically everything we are doing now is to help us to escape the things that are necessary. We reject them because they are not according to our present choice. We do not want to think. We do not want to waste our time growing. We want to have fun right now. When you do that to the body, you have a sick body. When you do that to a country, you have a sick country. And when all the world gathers together and does it, we have a sick world. Now, sickness is a rate of vibration, all things are. Integrities are rates of vibration. And even one single spark of light somewhere on the planet continues to shine. There's a wonderful saying, there's not enough darkness in all the world to hide the light of a single candle. So that there is not one single individual growing up and becoming better who is not contributing to the complete renovation of civilization. The little lights get more common. The procession of candles increases. And little by little, the light of the soul obscures the problems or fulfills the needs that we have, that to cover that which has been obscured by darkness. So we have the right to become part of a little procession of light bearers that goes on getting a few new members every once in a while. And little by little, this great procession of the light goes out not only here but off into space to make a better forever for us to all look forward to, which is something pretty rather good if you get it in the proper way. There is something, therefore, to be said that one kind deed is never lost. One kind thought is never lost. These vibrations add up. All of the reservoirs of good in nature are nourished just as the reservoirs of bad are overflowing. The vibratory problem has been taken up in India very strongly by a number of leaders, that all of the vibrations of those who are dedicated, these little sparks of integrity, all come together. All that is good mingles with all that is good. The two candles may be of a different faith or a different race, but they can come together in peace and harmony. Therefore, there is always a unifying process in truth and a dividing process in evil. In evil, there is no comradeship. There is no relationship that can build. This is why we cannot hope to build an evil world or be afraid we're going to have one. That which is wrong cannot meet and mingle other things that are wrong. The crimes of one person cannot be nullified by the crimes of another. Actually, there is no possible way of evil becoming immortal. There's no way of it becoming eternal, because evil hates itself. And evil in each individual fights evil in all other individuals, whereas the good in one finds joy in the good of another. So good is forever building, and evil is forever tearing down the very processes of itself. But evil in tearing itself down brings down civilization after civilization that somewhere along the line has dedicated itself to evil. When this happens, the problem goes on forever. But we now have very good hopes. Things look a little better than they did. There's a danger, as Emerson might say, that God has let loose a thinker or two. That there is a tendency at this time to more and more recognize the need. There is only one more step that is necessary, and that is that those who realize what is necessary, what must be done, must prepare themselves to do it. It is not enough to know that change is needed. We must know what kind of change and how it is going to be brought about. We must have the training to recognize the difference between change and progress, that things can change without getting much better, but they can also be always changed for the better. We have to have the necessary skills to express and dominate and apply the principles that we know to be necessary. We must therefore not only become dedicated, we must become informed. We must know the truth before it can make us free. We must understand wisdom before we can simply vote for it. We've got to know the things that have to be done. We have to not only dedicate our lives to searching for realities, but we must learn how to use them if we find them. We have to find out how to apply them to the immediate problems of personal life. Great political change is inevitable, and it is coming through a mass motion of the politically unfavored. There are many different things that are going to happen. Among other things, some of those things that happen are going to be unpleasant for us too, because most people have become too set in their comforts. They would rather be like the dragon that was guarding the treasures of the Nibelung in the story of Siegfried. When Siegfried annoys the dragon roars out loud, says, "Let me sleep." So it died, guarding its treasure. And we don't want to be disturbed. If things with the individual are reasonably possible, he never has known them to be good, but they'd become accustomed to them. He may not have the courage to make the changes that are needed. Some people who will consider themselves a little above the average will be disturbed. But this disturbance is for the better, for everything that happens to shake us out of this lethargy that we have fallen into will be of permanent value to all concerned. We know definitely that there is nothing that lives that is not eternal. There is nothing real that can die. There is nothing real in our own composition that is going to die. There is only a change of worlds, and there is a change of bodies, and if we are sincere and intelligent people, every change will be for the better. We are going to be all be more than we have ever been before. And the things we need to do are better deeds than we have ever done. We just have to do them. We have to put a universal reality prominent in our thinking. We have to think in terms of this great plan and the great purposes for which we were intended, in order that we may help to make this plan come true in its due time. Therefore, I think Hammurabi's other code comes in a little bit into this, and that is that we are no longer going to be able to divide civilization into classes with arbitrary limitations. We are not going to be able to decide that this person is more privileged than another person. There are no privileges in nature. There are opportunities. But we have to make them privileges only by our own use of them. It is our privilege to have patience. It is our privilege to be kind. It is our privilege to be generous, and it is our privilege to carry the responsibilities of life with dignity and with quiet strength of spirit. We are privileged to do all kinds of things if we are willing to take with those privileges the responsibilities which they involve. Unless we do take the responsibilities, the privileges can become a very heavy and dangerous burden upon the spirit. We must try in every way that we can to reach forward into the future, not because it makes things easier, but because it makes things better. And making things better is the secret of survival. It's no longer a case of where we can put this off for another generation or two. We are coming very close to a final decision. And as we look at the paper every day, discounting it somewhat, as we study the reports that we get and eliminate the exaggerations, we find ourselves in the presence of a major human motion, a tremendous realization that things cannot continue as they are, and also a realization that if we allow them to continue as they are, they will get worse. This is a law of nature. This is a true philosophical Murphyism, if there ever was one. We are therefore contrived to do it better. We've got to start in to find ways to conserve natural resource, and most of all, educate our young for a world that we may not live to see. We've got to make sure that these young people have guidance spiritually and morally, ethically and physically. We must demand of our education that it make possible the production of an adult human being. It is not necessarily possible to produce enough accountants or computer operators to save civilization. We've got to have more individuals with their skills, but also with their principles. They've got to stand for what they believe, they've got to refuse to cooperate with corruption, and they've got to have faith in the integrities of life. We must have a solid religion that is non-theological, a religion based on the fact that deity stands for the infinite, the inevitable, and the ultimate good. By when we do this, we have a religion that any normal human being can use. All over the world now, where atheistic cultures have been built up, they have a resurgence of religious belief. More and more, religion is returning. As Napoleon pointed out, you can conquer people with an army, but you can only become a leader in peace with the help of religion. Therefore, we must have a realization that many people, millions of people, find they cannot live without spiritual consolation and strength. And regardless of the politics under which they function, they are returning to the solid foundations of the belief in God and hope in God's infinite mercy. Then there is no reason why, under a tree system such as ours, that we should make it impossible for our young people to recognize religion as an essential part of education. It is just as important as reading, writing, and arithmetic. It is just as important that the individual have ideals as it is that he can work algebra. In fact, it is more important. And it is much more important for a university graduate to graduate with a solid foundation of idealism than in any art or science in which he may major. These things have to become part of our way of life, and they're coming. We have a large upsurge of belief in faith at this time. Not here all alone, but everywhere in the world. Old churches, temples, mosques, and pagodas that were closed are open again. Because humanity in its need must have God, must have faith, must have inner security, which no amount of physical or political assurance can bestow. That we have to depend upon something within ourselves to survive stress. And that survival is very largely vested in our hope that we are part of a plan ruled over by divine wisdom and an infinite love that can take care of all the problems with which we are faced. So we have now, I think, one decision we have to make in our own lives, and that is whether we are going to return to copy our way of life from nature, or whether we're going to allow it to be engineered for us by various intellectual groups that have never succeeded in solving a problem. It is time to go back and study the birds and the bees. It is time for us to go back and look at the sunsets. And it is time for us to regain that quiet faith that comes from those who realize that we live in a universe of ultimate and infinite love, and that it's only our own selfishness that makes things look so bad. I think we will find gradually that the return to nature nature's laws, nature's will, can rescue us from the involved political chicanery of those who are trying to work their way out of a problem by creating a new one. This we can do. We will have to go along for a while without making too much change, or we may get into too much trouble. But for the most part, down inside, we've got to keep in mind forever that we have to grow, that we are growing, that we will grow. And with our growth comes the solution of problems and the perpetuation of this beautiful planet on which we live and which we have more or less only abused for thousands of years. We've got to learn to love the planet and as well as the people on it. We've got to learn to love the laws that have given us a beautiful world, and we must dedicate ourselves once more to making this world as beautiful as we received it. We received a garden, and we cannot end with a dump yard. We've got to learn to restore that garden, and in so doing, fulfill the destiny for which we are naturally intended. Thank you very much.